I know things you never see. You never see someone taking a shit while running at full speed.
Come on, Key, get rid of some of them turds in the shit box.
Welcome to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, Rab himself. Hello and welcome to the Bathroom Break Podcast with me, your host, Rab himself. I have an awesome guest here in the studios, and by studios, I mean in his living room.
Hell yeah.
My guest today is comedian Nick Romero. And dude, some funny ass shit. I've seen some of your bits, and I can't wait to come out and see a show. And you have so much stuff going on. You have a show, couples therapy, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we're on tour right now. My girlfriend's actually here in the corner.
Hello,
RSA. She's hanging out.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've got couples therapy. We're touring a few days every month in a different state. Other than that, man, I'm just grinding it out. Dude.
Yeah.
We've got a cartoon pilot that we're trying to get picked up right now.
Oh, nice.
We're looking for an animator so that we can like self-produce it and stuff.
Okay.
And then we'll have it all ready to pitch. We have like our story arc all laid out.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just a ton of things in the fucking chamber.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. You know, it was funny. I was just thinking about like when I met you the first time I went up on stage and told a shit story in front of everybody. And you know, I won't call it stand up, but it was the first time I ever got up there.
That was stand up.
And did that. And it was fucking nerve wracking, but it was so fun.
It was so funny too, because the person I was telling Danielle about this last night. I was like, the person that went on before you just sucked the life out of the room. I don't remember who it was, but we were talking to our buddy yeah. Josh Denny, the comic, and I was talking to him after, and he was like, thank God Rab went up before I did. After that guy, he was like, because I don't think anybody else that didn't have like that type of like TV credit to their name could have pulled it off after that. And like, you saved the show that night. You realize that.
Oh,
right?
I'm gonna get a big head with that.
No, dude, you saved the show. And like, to discredit and be like, I don't know if that's stand up, that is what we do, dude. We're telling stories about things. And the story that you told, which I don't know if you've told it on this podcast, fucking great, because it was all in our minds. Anyways,
yeah,
and it was about the what was it about again? It was about the running and shitting, right?
Yeah, when
and how many X-lax you took that day, and the ramifications that it had throughout the rest of the day. That was the
exactly.
best part, because that's the shit that we don't think about. We're just like, oh, okay, cool. We saw this quick segment on the CKY video, and then it's on to the next thing, and it's out of our brains.
Yeah.
Because that was the editing style that you guys had at that time, was to just keep it quick, right?
Yeah,
that
exactly.
was like the thing. I was watching the podcast that you did with Bam too recently, and you guys were talking about that, how you guys were smart because you knew that attention spans were quick. And that was the thing, but like, you don't see the ramifications or the months after or the days after the effects of these things that you guys were doing that whole time. That's fucking gnarly to tell the story. Like, I want to hear the story again, because it's funny. Like, basically what happened, like, dude, you were like banging some chick, right, that night?
Yeah.
And you shit the bed, right?
Well, I shit in between my butt cheeks, and then the poop water like ran down my legs. As I was getting out of I disguised it in like, oh my God, I need a glass of water. And I ran out of the bedroom, and there's shit like leaking down my leg and onto the carpet. And
that shit had me dying so hard. Just the length in which you were describing it, it was all, it seemed to me like you'd done it before. Like you probably told this story a bunch, right?
I've told it. Yeah.
Cause it seemed, as comedians, we call it tags, which is like the little jokes leading up to the big joke.
Yeah.
And you had them throughout the entire story. It did not get boring. And you went for 10 minutes on just this topic.
Yeah.
Do you understand how hard that is to do and what it is that we do?
I know.
To stretch one fucking story out for that length. And you didn't get boring the entire time, and you were fucking annihilating the room the whole time.
Damn,
I couldn't
dude.
Believe that was your first time doing it.
Shit, I appreciate that. That means a lot, like coming from a real comedian who actually does it.
Dude,
you know?
That was so funny. And that's the shit that we work on as comics, is stretching those stories out and keeping them going for a long time. Because when you do get booked, and you're booked on the road, people don't understand – what goes into putting a show together or putting jokes together, and to make it like people will be like, "Oh, can you do an hour?" And you're like, "Fuck, I mean, I can." I don't know how great it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, especially if you're not like a seasoned.
That sounds like an eternity.
For, yeah. Know, like, but dude, you went up there and talked about one fucking story. I'm sure you got a million just like it.
Yeah, there's definitely a bunch.
Of like broken bones or fucking jumping up. I was telling Danielle this literally last night. I was like, we were watching that podcast and then we watched some CKY stuff. And I was like, dude, that's my friend. Like I watched this guy while I was growing up. Him and his buddies are the reason why I've jumped off the roof of this house that we're in.
That's awesome.
And like now we're sitting down and hanging out and talking. That's fucking weird for me. You know what I mean? But at the same time, so cool. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
Like you have to understand that culture that you guys pushed at that time, that like MTV, when MTV was still fucking badass, was like, everybody wanted to hang out with you guys. You realize that, right?
Oh, dude, yeah.
Every dude from age fucking...
I realize it because that's why I'm in a program of recovery now.
Yeah, man.
Because I did go hang out with everybody.
Every dude right now from age 28 to like 40, 45, at one point while watching your guys' videos or watching your shit on TV was like, I want to fucking hang with those dudes.
Dude.
I want to party with you. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that happened a lot. Dude.
And it was wild, and it was a crazy, you know, decade of my life for sure.
Just anywhere you went, everybody was just shoving booze in your face, right?
Or booze, like drugs,
shoving
women,
party
whatever.
Got brought
yeah.
to you,
yeah.
even if that wasn't your intention, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was definitely that whole lifestyle of living like a rock star, for sure, for like 10 years.
So hard to get out of.
Yeah,
when
it,
you get
it was.
Sucked into it.
Yeah,
and that's something that we have in common too.
Yeah,
I know it's taboo. We don't really talk about it, but like we're both dudes.
Yeah.
We're both in recovery.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how much time do you have?
My sobriety is September 25th, 2009. So
September 25th, dude.
Yeah, like
I'm September 15th. 2015.
Okay, there you go.
So
yeah, good stuff.
September,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. So <What's> yeah, <up? laughs> it's like what like Earth, Wind, and Fire song. Yeah. but you know, a little over 9 years, and it's been incredible to be sober and living a sober life.
Have you done the peaks and valleys throughout the 9 years, or like did you hit a point where it was just like, okay, I'm at a plateau and everything's good? And I'm consistent. Or is it constantly? Are you still going through the same shit that I'm going through at 3? You know what I mean?
Probably maybe not as deep of valleys and not as high of peaks, but they're still there. Like, because obviously the goal is to have
that
you know,
plateau.
Yeah, but I don't think we get there, and I think that's why they say progress, not perfection.
I don't think it's an attainable thing, right?
Right.
And that's basically what we're taught.
You strive for it, but you strive to not let it get so out of hand, but they happen.
Right.
Those ups and downs happen, and I think, like, obviously because life continues to happen and you learn how to cope with it through recovery, but you know all this. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but it's like some days you're good and some days you're not good at it.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing is there's some days where it's like, well, I just didn't drink and do drugs today. So I got that going
and
for me.
Sometimes that's all you need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some days like that's enough.
Yeah.
Especially in the beginning.
Yeah.
A lot of times that was enough.
Yeah.
To be like, oh, okay, I can lay down and be like, all right, I'm cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't fucking really accomplish anything today.
Yeah.
But what I did by not doing anything was an accomplishment in itself.
Yeah, and or I dropped a bomb on all my personal relationships. But hey, they'll appreciate me again tomorrow. You know? But I didn't get drunk.
Dude, I loved that part about the program, though.
Yeah.
Was being able to go. And I think that's kind of what prepped me for stand-up was like, going in there and being able to talk about just sad shit for so long.
Yeah.
And then eventually I was able to start making it funny.
Right.
Along the way.
Yeah.
After
and you have
saying
to.
It so
yeah.
many times, I started laughing at it. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What the fucking nightmare.
Yeah. Dude, yeah, I mean, you have to. You have to be able to laugh through all that dark, morbid shit or else, you know.
And that's what my whole fucking stand-up routine is, dude. I'm literally just taking you along the path of what fucking happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, and that's a great point because I want to hear kind of what happened with you because I do know a little bit about your history of being, you know, in a band and basically doing, like, Warped Tour and these other things.
Yeah,
and
it's not much different from, like, basically what you went through except – the party wasn't really coming after me anymore. Nobody was like once, like my little bit of stint of like whatever popularity died out really quick and I didn't want to let it go. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I was the dude bringing the party to like friends and they're like, dude, grow the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, when are you going to get it together? I'm like, fuck you, man.
I got it together. What are you talking about? So what band were you in? Like, what was
I was in a band called Pristine.
Okay.
So we sounded, at the time it was like, center like Deftones meets Glassjaw meets The Used.
Yeah,
like
okay.
That's whole Warped Tour scene style music.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like screamo-y, I guess you would call it. I don't know. Post-hardcore.
Okay, and you were the singer, right?
Yeah, I was a singer. And the last time that I was on this thing, we didn't air it, but like the story that I told you about was like, I literally shit my pants 10 minutes before going on stage at Warped Tour.
I want to hear that now because I don't know if we'll put that one on, but let's hear the real.
Yeah. Okay. So like, you know,
hold on. So let's paint the picture. You're the singer for this band who's like, you know, you're kind of a badass
We're kind of doing our thing. You know what I mean?
Tattoos,
we never really got big, whatever.
But you're like this badass rock star dude. And like for me to run around shitting, oh, it's funny, but you're like this badass rock star dude going on stage and then.
Right. See, that's the thing. But like my mentality was like, you guys, man, I just wanted to have a good time. I was fucking partying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're late to the venue, to the fairground or whatever it is, wherever the fuck we were. I don't remember exactly, but we were late because I was waiting for a guy who knew a guy that could get me some fucking drugs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, drugs.
So we're late. I'm refusing to go. You can't go on stage without your singer. You know what I mean? So you're doing what I want. So everybody's pissed off at me. Whatever, we get there. I have to shit so bad. They won't pull over. You know what I mean? They won't pull over. We're gunning it for like 2 hours to get to where we got to go.
Yeah.
Nobody's pulling over. I'm telling them, dude, I got to shit really bad. Whatever. I had a habit of not carrying equipment to the stage or helping set up.
Oh, you're a diva, little crybaby bitch. Like all of us addicts. I get it.
They call it lead singer syndrome.
Yeah.
So I had that.
You're
that
important.
I'm the guy. They're here to see me, not you guys. You know what I mean?
What
like, that was the fucking bullshit
what
mentality.
A dick.
It really, yeah, it was a fucking idiot.
So, but yeah, I mean, that's what happens, though.
So I show up, whatever. I'm fucking wasted. Like half a bottle deep, you know what I mean? Like getting ready to do my stuff. And so they're like, no, dude, you got to get one arm to help carry this cab and the other arm, you got a guitar. And the fairgrounds, you were on Warped Tour, right?
Yeah.
So the fairgrounds, you're walking like a mile, dude.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Carrying shit.
Yep.
So I'm walking there, you know, the bathrooms are in one designated area across the fucking fairground, which is far.
Conveniently,
all the way on the other side from where the stage is.
Yeah.
So I'm fucking, okay, I dropped the stuff. Shit's going down my leg. I'm wearing shorts that day. I've already done the thing where.
So you have it in your hands and you shit and then it.
Oh, I start shitting.
Did you think it was a fart or like what? Like
no, it was like I've been holding it too long and I
just
can't. My bowels are like, we don't work anymore, dude. It's done.
Like, well, you're just like, that's it.
Yeah. So I'm shitting and I'm like shitting and I just drop the stuff and I start running to the bathroom. And when you're on tour for like an extended length of period of time, like you've already like ran through all your clean underwear.
Yeah.
You've worn them inside out. You've done.
You don't
have
any on at
some
point.
It's middle of summer and it's just getting hotter the further east you're traveling.
Just baking that
just
shit.
Just baking in a, you know. So I'm in these fucking, you know, cut off jean shorts, no underwear. And shit's just running down my leg.
Oh.
Like, you're seeing the shit come down my leg.
There you go.
And I'm running to the bathroom, and, like, there's kids, like, that know the band, you know what I mean? Like, seeing this happening, I'm literally cleaning my
this
chones out,
dirty
just
up.
Butt naked, like, shit just everywhere, cleaning my fucking shorts out in the sink. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And felt like a real awesome rock star at that moment.
After shitting the rest out. And I got to put those shorts back on. You know what I mean?
For real?
Yeah, dude. What am I going to do? I'm going to walk across the whole place with my dick hanging out? No. I don't have anything on me. So I put the wet shorts back on.
Ew, I know that feeling, too.
And it's time to go on stage. Yeah. You know, sound check. It's time, dude. You're on. You're late. You know what I mean? So I go up. And I got it out, but I'm not good.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
I don't trust. So, like, I wouldn't trust a fart. Fucking for anything at this point. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. And like at the time, like our band was known for like going a little wild, you know what I mean? And like kind of going crazy. So the kids are there to see us fucking like break some shit or fucking like jump off the fucking whatever and like jump around and throw shit around.
Yeah.
And I straight up say on the mic, I'm like, hey guys, I know what you're here. Like after the first song, I just do it very blandly, do what I'm supposed to do. And I just say to the guys,
I'm like, a little tummy ache.
I'm like, I'm a little sick today, guys. Like, I know you're here to see a show, blah, 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 whatever. And the guitarist that has his mic set up to do like backing vocals or whatever.
Yeah.
Goes, tell him the truth.
Sold your ass right out.
I'm like, dude, shut, you know, like the whole like, dude, shut up. You know, covering the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like, tell him the truth. I was like, fuck, I'm already fucked up. I'm like, fuck it. I shit my pants. Yeah! Everyone just cheers. I'm like, okay, cool.
You get an awesome reaction.
But, dude.
Yeah.
So, you get it? We've done some fucking dumb shit.
Yeah.
Drunk so you guys and that wasn't the first time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I've been passed out here. Like, my poor fucking parents, dude. Like, my stepmother, I know a couple of times, has, like, walked in on me, like laying in the bathtub after puking and like shitting.
Yeah.
And I'm
yeah,
just sitting
yeah.
there with like shit and puke on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like fucked up shit.
Oh yeah, that's the idea.
But dude, I've shit my pants more times in my 20s than I ever remember shitting them as a kid though.
Yeah.
But I do remember one time, since we're on the bathroom break
that
podcast.
Was just so easily right over. Oh, I've shit them more in my 20s than when I was a baby.
But I do right. I got one time that I do remember, and this is in my stand up, and I'll tell you how I tell it.
Yeah.
There was one time that was really prominent. I was in kindergarten, and we're all sitting crisscross applesauce on the carpet. You know how you do. Well, the teacher's up in front. She was giving out awards that day. And I don't know if you remember, but when we were 6 years old, dude, nothing was funnier than farts.
Oh,
you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
And they're still fun.
I'm almost 40, and nothing's funnier than farts.
So you get it, right? So nothing's funnier than farts. I look around the room. I feel one coming on. I'm like, ooh, I'm about to fucking, it's my time to shine.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I look at my buddies. I go to let one go, and out comes a king-size Snickers bar built to share, dude. All right? I turn ghost.
He's just like,
dude,
like lift off the ground.
Yeah. I just swizzle.
Yeah, yeah.
So I turn ghost white. I don't know what to do. I grab my pant leg like this so it doesn't come trickling out. I stand up and I start going to the door to go to the restroom. All of a sudden I hear student of the month this month, Nicholas Romero.
Dude, you're like, what? Not right now.
Yeah, for the people watching this, I'm Nicholas Romero, just so we're on board.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah,
if
yeah,
you don't
yeah.
remember.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, what am I gonna do? So I go up to the front to accept my award.
With the shit in your pants?
With the shit in my pants, still clutching it. And she goes, Nick, how'd you do it? Give us a speech.
You're like, well,
what?
I tried to fart, but it... Oh, not this?
Yeah. So the most eclectic thing I could think of to respond with in my six-year-old brain in that moment is fucking, I had an accident.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the whole crowd, I had an accident.
So you thought she was asking about how'd you do the shit?
I just,
how did you take the shit in your pants? And you're going,
you know,
but really she means how were you the best student?
Yeah,
but you're like, this turd is the only thing
well,
on
I'm
my
just
mind
I'm telling her like, help me, I shit my pants, basically, without saying help me, I shit my pants.
yeah,
I'm like, I had an accident.
Oh,
you know
man,
what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that's like code to yes. older people, like, okay, he just pooped his pants. I should probably figure this out.
Yeah,
because I'm the one who's supposed to do that, right?
Dude, that's awesome.
So I'm like, I had an accident, and like everybody's like looking stunned until it fucking dawns on them.
Yeah,
and like in their brains, they're probably thinking, this is the most humble 6-year-old in the world. He accidentally became student of the month. Little did they know, I'm smuggling the entire box of Lincoln Logs and my Ninja Turtle undies. So I get excused to go to the restroom finally. And I take the Ninja Turtle undies off. And I remember when I was a kid, seeing my mom do this, when I would shit my pants, she would like take the underwear, flush the shit out, and then she would hit the, you know, the flusher or whatever, while keeping the chones in there to like wash them out. You know what I mean? To like rinse them off. So I'm doing that in the fucking toilet.
Yeah. I love that you remembered that she did it because you were clearly shitting your pants so often that she had a way of cleaning them.
Dude, I'm just assuming that what was going through my head at that time was, because when you're five or six, at that point, like, shitting your pants isn't okay anymore. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be doing that anymore. Guy. So I'm sure, like, the last time that I shit my pants prior to that, I was probably getting, like, a really, dude, come on. Fuck. You know what I mean? Like, shamed while she's doing the thing in the toilet with the underwear.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, oh, maybe if I just do this, like, nobody's going to find out, and I'm not going to get in trouble that I shit my pants. So I did. I did that. I put my fucking pants back on, and I go back to class with fucking wet chones, dude. Wet Ninja Turtle undies.
Soggy turd pants.
That's my shit story. Dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I had a pair of soggy turd pants on after I shit on the window in New York City because we had to go.
What?
We had to go, like.
Why were you shitting on a window in New York?
Yeah, like I took a shit on this old couple's breakfast in New York, like right on the window. I pressed my ass against the window and then took a shit.
Oh, while they were in there
eating?
They're
in there eating, and I pressed the ass against the window and then shit.
Was it on film?
Yeah. Okay. It was on one of the CKYs. And then we ran away from it and ran back up the stairs in order to, like, you know, get away from the whole situation. And Bam was filming it, and we were laughing as we're going up the steps. And he tells me, like, shit, dude, I think I hit the record button and I missed the part where we were laughing up the steps. Like, we got to go redo that. And I had already jumped into the shower and rinsed the pants off, and there's shit and water all in them. And I was like, oh, we can't go do it. We can't fake a laugh. That's lame. And he's like, dude, but we have to because it's so good. It looks so good.
Little did you know that was going to be a regular thing.
Yeah,
right?
You
were telling me, right?
They were
like, Rab.
Oh, people of Bam,
They tested in, I guess, 15-year-old girls like it when you laugh. So can you do the laugh more? I remember you telling me that.
And you're like, just make me laugh.
Yeah, how fucking lame, dude.
Yeah, that's the world of TV. But so, to finish that, and I don't know if I've told it on here before, but what happened was, I was like, okay, cool, let's go film this laugh. And I put these soggy, shitty, wet pants on, and I go get into the elevator with Bam, and we go in the elevator, we get on the elevator, start going down. As the door opens in the lobby, the door opens, and it's the old people whose breakfast I took a shit on. Like, the old people who were at the window are standing right there at the fucking door as it opened.
Oh, no.
And I was like, what? Because I was like, they're staying in the same hotel as us. And I flip out. I run right past them with the soggy, wet shit pants. And I'm like, start cracking up. And I'm like, I can't believe it's fucking them. And we're dying laughing. And we're running up.
Was that on camera at
least? And so he got the video of that. And we used that laugh.
That's
and it was
so
a real
funny.
Laugh because they were right there at the bottom of the
elevator.
So it
worked out.
So it
no
it
bullshit
took,
TV magic.
It wasn't lame. It wasn't
That's so
fake.
Funny, dude.
But yeah, I could relate to the soggy, wet, shitty pants.
Fuck, man.
But it's funny. I was thinking when you were telling that story of like getting in trouble, like my buddy's little boy is like being potty trained, and he like he'll try to go to the bathroom and stuff, but what he'll normally do, like when we were just over there the other day, he'll just wander underneath this little like play school table and sit there and stare at you and then just shit. Like under the
like
under the table.
Eye contact.
Yeah, like just looking you deep in the eyes as he's shitting.
Just, he's...
And you're like, ew, like I don't want to be staring at you while you're shitting. I could see him like grunting, like,
oh no.
You know, but it's just fucking
like
hilarious.
This is supposed to be intimate, yeah. Dude. What are you doing?
It's funny the shame though that the little kids feel of the shit.
I mean, well,
and I turned that around and ended up just using it to my advantage. I have no shame. I will
no
shit
shame.
In front of everybody.
Shit.
And you can watch my Unt asshole man. As the turd comes out. I have no problem with that.
Dude.
But yeah, so okay, so you got a couple, you know, good shit stories there for sure. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about the band though. You guys tour, you did Warped Tour. Did you make an album?
Yeah, we had an EP that we did like a distribution deal with a Japanese distribution company, so they kind of pushed
you guys
it
are
more.
Huge in Japan,
so they kind of push it more overseas.
Nice.
But like over here nobody gave a shit,
dude.
You know,
like
I mean?
Like Jimmy Pop and evil Jared Hasselhoff from Bloodhound Gang are like buddies of mine, and
are they like huge overseas?
Yeah, they were huge here. They had a huge hit here, a couple huge hits here, and then now it's like in Germany and Europe and all that. Like they're doing
everywhere,
huge
right?
shows. Yeah,
so that's how it was like nothing really took off here because the bands that we did kind of sound like and stuff like that were already like established, and they're like they're the dudes,
yeah,
you know what I mean? But like we got this like subgenre thing that's like kind of a blend of that, and it was kind of taking off everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So like it was cool for a couple of years, but
yeah
and then after it, like basically everybody went on hiatus. We went on hiatus. We never really like announced a breakup or anything like that. It's just everybody I was in the band with, I was 21 or 22 at the time.
Yeah.
When the band was like starting to
get tired
to be
and,
done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I mean, you guys are on the road a lot.
We're on the road a lot. Everybody else in the band was much older than me, like getting ready to get into their 30s, had children already. So
yeah.
They were like, oh, we did what we wanted to do. We're kind of done.
Yeah, moving.
Like, we don't need to chase it anymore. We're getting
jobs
and stuff, and we're having kids, and we're settling down. Here I am at 22, like, but I'm a fucking rock star.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Don't you go anywhere.
What do I do now?
I got more pants to shit.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So the party just kept continuing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just a slippery slope, dude, until it got to the point where, like, I was dating this chick. And this is like the most recent girl prior to Danielle that like I was dating. And we were just both gnarly alcoholics, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would have explosive fights and then make up. Explosive fights and then make up until it got to the point where she was like, I'm tired of the explosive fights. She fucking turned me into the cops, dude.
Yeah.
I did some time in jail on a fucking DV case.
Oh, wow.
Got out. I'm 3 years I've been here in this house back with my parents, like getting shit back together. You know what I mean?
Sort of.
I put out an album all about it with the band Stray Life that I did. That was the last project that I did that was music. It was the first time I'd ever rapped, which was cool. Like,
yeah.
I rap on that album.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fucking badass. You know what I mean? Like it was a cool thing because I'd never done it. I didn't know I was good at rapping. And then I put that out and that was cool. But like I still have a second half that like I haven't released yet.
Yeah.
That like me and my buddy Jeff Sehun, who's in a band called Let Live, or was in a band called Let Live at the time, we kind of did the whole album together and broke it up into two parts. So it's like still ready to be mixed and mastered and released, the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But I fell into stand up. And
so how did you like, so okay, so you're kind of playing with a new band doing that, and then how did you fall into stand up?
Okay, so it's weird. When you get sober, you're like, oh shit, what do I do now? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, what do I do for fun?
Yes, I know that.
You know, like things get boring. So I just started hanging out at the Comedy Store all the time.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't have anything to do. And I'd just go and hang out at the store and like start making friends with the door guys. And then they started letting me in. Well, I don't know if I could say that, but like they, when you know people, like they let you,
they started letting you in for money.
For money. I paid for every ticket.
Yes.
But basically I would just sit in the back and I would get to watch all these awesome comics like doing their thing. And like, then I started going on Mondays regularly.
Yeah.
And on Mondays, it's the Kill Tony podcast, which is basically open micers go up and do a minute bit and then get roasted
Yeah.
Ruthlessly.
I've been to the Kill Tony podcast.
You've been to the
podcast.
Kill Tony show?
My buddy Rick Kosick.
Yeah, Rick goes all the time.
Yeah,
Rick and,
he brought me
Jason,
there.
Or Wee Man.
Yeah.
They're there all the time.
Yeah. Rick brings me up from time to time, and we go up there and hang out and check it out.
Yeah, those dudes
and
are...
That thing is... that. I mean, that's a fucking big show.
It's cool.
You know what
I mean?
It's
You're
fun.
In front of like 250, 300 people every week.
Yeah,
and
so...
And when you tank in front of those dudes,
sure.
it's brutal. You know what I mean? So I just started watching that consistently for like 8 months, never signing up, anything like that. And then finally I got the balls to do it. And the first time I signed up, I got pulled.
Oh.
And I didn't really have anything prepared. And I went up on this bit that like I've retired since and it wasn't ready yet. And I just fucking tanked so hard, dude.
Oh, what was the bit?
It was about like Reese's peanut butter cups or something like that.
Oh, they are delicious.
They're delicious. But so what the bit
perfect
turned
combination.
Into, what the bit turned into is like you remember those Reese's commercials from the 90s, there's no wrong way to eat a Reese's.
Yeah.
You remember them?
Yeah.
And then I go, that's bullshit. You're telling me if I crumpled up a Reese's, mashed it on my balls and had my dog lick it off, that's not a wrong way to eat a Reese's?
Yeah.
I sit with it for a minute and I go, because you all know damn well dogs can't have chocolate.
Yeah.
Like that's the bit.
Yeah.
Like when it was
it's
finally
not bad. Yeah.
Stupid.
But what's the big deal?
But that was the bit, and what it ended up becoming was that dumb joke.
Yeah.
But prior to that, I was like playing with it, where I'm like, really? What about morally? And then I list off these like immoral ways to eat Reese's.
Yeah.
Like, what about out of Bill Cosby's candy jar? You know, might not remember how many you ate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't there yet.
Yeah.
So I'm like going up doing like an open mic bit on this stage, on the main stage of the Comedy Store in front of 250 people, and they're just like, we're not having it, dude. This isn't funny.
Yeah, and then they just ripped you.
And that was the first time I'd ever done stand-up, was in front of 250
God,
people.
Damn, that's awful.
First time.
Yeah.
And they just...
What made you want to keep doing it?
That rush of like...
Yeah.
Dude, it was a high, and I hadn't felt that low in a long time either.
So
I was clinging on to
bit.
Anything that made me feel... anything.
Yeah, I hear
and
that.
And then I just started making friends.
Yeah.
And just started hitting the mics around town.
Yeah.
And then finally, like, things, like, I got a solid act together, and now we're out on the road, and, like, I'm headlining. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Out of state.
So how many years have you been doing it now?
It's a year.
Oh, a year.
It's
so this was a year ago when you did the Kill Tony.
Yeah, it's coming up on a year. It'll be a year in March.
Oh, wow.
Is when I've... Yeah, in
And you hustle because I see your Instagram and you guys are doing shows all
you
the time.
See
and
yeah, there's
and
a.
Yeah.
I was talking to Josh Denny about this on his podcast. There's a right way and a wrong way to grind.
Yeah.
Yes, be out every night doing your thing,
mm-hmm.
and be telling your jokes, but pay attention to the audience and pay attention to what's working and what's not.
Right. Because
if you're going up and you're just doing the same thing over and over again,
and you're
like,
not.
Eventually it's going to get a laugh. Like, no,
dude. Yeah.
Construct your shit to the feedback.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a lot of people have problems with that. You'll see 2-3 year plus comics going up doing the same shit that they've been doing for 2-3 years, just tanking hard because it's like they refuse to alter the bit because they're not humble enough to be like, oh, I'm not, what I wrote originally isn't funny.
Yeah, that and exactly. And what I see a lot with comics or comedians that I struggle with a little bit when I love
you love stand-up.
Yeah.
You love the intricacies of it.
Yeah, I love the art form and it's incredible. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of George Carlin, and so I did that
Hell
bit
yeah.
and like, but you know, everybody like Lenny Bruce is so amazing for what he
the
did
man,
for
dude.
Freedom of Speech and all, you know, and then going into obviously Pryor and you know, all of the guys and Chris Rock and
all the
Chappelle
main staples.
Yeah. And you know, all this, but I love it. I love Bill Hicks. He's amazing. And you know, and Dennis Leary was the shit. Like when I was young, I loved No Cure for Cancer. And like,
right.
There's so many, like I'm a huge fan of stand up and, but one thing that really drives me nuts, not to get too far from the point, cause the point for that for me was like, when you go out there and then you bomb, And then you go, oh, it's the audience. Sometimes there's
crowds that don't react like the last one did. Sure. Like maybe for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But for the most part, like if you get titters out of a crowd that's already not that responsive, just be glad that you got that.
Yeah. Like,
but you can't blame it on the audience ever.
Right. And the thing is, like, of course there are some people that come out and they're like most people will come out and they're like, I want to laugh today. That's why I'm going to see comedy. But some people come out and they're in such a place that they can't even laugh or whatever. Like I noticed the night that I went up and did the story, that, okay, so Sam Tripoli, he's hilarious, and he killed. Like, he went out, and he fucking killed, and people were cracking up, and I was laughing. I don't know if I was laughing harder than everybody, but I was laughing. That shit was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then somebody went after him. It was, like, a little dark, because the whole idea of the show was to be dark.
Dark humor.
And do that. And it was a little dark, but it didn't do well. And then someone else went, and it didn't do that well. And what I noticed while that was happening, and what I also noticed while Sam was killing, was that there was this girl up there in the front row, her and her boyfriend, that did not want to laugh at anything. Mm-hmm. There was this funny stuff happening, and this shit was hilarious, and they're not laughing. They did not want to laugh. And I was like, oh, God. So I started getting in my head a little bit about it before I was going on stage, and I'm like, oh, that chick does not want to laugh. So luckily for me, I had never been up on stage, and I didn't know what the feeling was or what it was. I've been on tons of stages as far as with CKY and with that, and with like announcing things or promoting things or doing Jackass live stunts I've done all that, but I've never gone up there in a stand-up situation to tell jokes or tell a funny story and try to get laughs. And when I walked up there on the stage, I did not know that spotlight blinds you like that. Yeah. So then I was like, I can't even see.
You're like, I can't see their faces anyways.
Yeah. And I noticed that. And that, so that right in the beginning, I was sort of blinded and like looking down a little bit.
It's like that at that particular spot, really bad.
Okay.
Where you really can't see people's faces.
Yeah.
And for me personally, that shit throws me off my game sometimes.
It threw
sometimes
me a little.
Like, I really like to look at people and talk to them directly so that they can relate and to draw them in and get them on my side.
And I thought there would be some sort of intimacy of connecting with people that were there. But when that happened, I was like, dude, I'm like blinded a little. And it threw me off at first. And then it kind of helped because then I could block out the thought of this girl's not going to laugh at anything.
Yeah.
And so then I started telling the stories and doing this thing. And I guess the only thing that she thought was funny in life was shitting yourself and stuff to do with shit. Because as I told that, then I'm like, I'm hearing laughs and I'm hearing laughs. And it's like, okay, this is cool. This is working. These are working. This is good. And then like, I kind of looked out of the corner of my eye and I saw her laughing.
And
the first time that night.
And well, you were also the face of the show that night. You were the one with the most credits.
Oh, I didn't even
realize
that.
So you were the one that was the most recognizable as far as face value goes too. And sometimes people are showing up for the show.
If they know you, they'll relate easier.
On face value alone. And don't give a shit about anybody else that isn't famous.
Absolutely, because I've heard like obviously, like I said, I just told a story, but I've heard like you guys, like real comedians that say that like it'll be like, you know, Seinfeld or somebody that's like a big time and everybody knows him. It's like, well, I don't even have to try. I just walk out there and then they already think it's funny because I'm there. And
just because
like,
you're saying
it. It was Seinfeld or maybe it was Chris Rock or one of the big guys. They were like, basically, like, it's hard to work out material because you can't judge whether they're just laughing because they know you.
Yeah, that was on that HBO special that they did, Talking Comedy, right?
Okay,
that. It was Rock, Louis C.K., Ricky Gervais, and Seinfeld talking about it.
Yeah.
They're like,
yep.
Do you think they're just laughing because it's you?
Yeah.
Or do you think the material is actually funny? They'll give you some more wiggle room. But at the end of the day, if the material's not funny, it's just not funny.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, it'll only, that star power will only last for so long before they're like,
yeah.
Boo.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. Yeah. What happened?
I came here to laugh, asshole.
Where's Costanza?
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Where's that?
Yeah.
Whatever guy.
Yeah.
Where's Michael Richards?
Yeah.
We were talking about earlier.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. And I know. And so, but it was funny because, she laughed and then It was weird, and I can imagine how, as you know, if it was something that I did pursue, like you
the
pursue,
high.
Like
right?
I could imagine how that would eat at you, though, of like, okay, I got the laughs here, I got the laughs here, but why didn't that?
But I didn't
laugh?
Get that motherfucker.
Yeah. And
I talked to Sam Tripoli about that too, and he's been like, I forgot where we were. I think we're at the parlor. I don't know if it's on Sunset, but it's in downtown, and he was doing, or in Hollywood, and he was doing, and the room just wasn't paying attention. And Sam's like a vet, dude. This guy's been doing it for a long time.
And how could you not pay attention to him? Because he grabs your attention.
He grabs your attention, and he was really trying, like really going for it that night. And he got off stage, and he walked off, and he was like, "Fuck, I had to work for them tonight."
Yeah.
Like that's what came out of his mouth. He was like, "I had to work for them tonight." And when you have nights like that, and it usually happens when you're doing like a bar show, because people, some of the people that are there, like, are just showing up to drink. They didn't even know a comedy show was going to happen, so they don't give a fuck what you're doing up there.
Yeah,
they're there to drink and whatever, do what they came there to do.
Yeah,
and they got their backs to
you. That's the worst, though. That seems like the hardest thing to do.
Dude, those are the people that you try to target and cater to the most, and like the easiest way to ease that tension is to straight up just start going after them.
Jab at them. Yeah,
like, go after them. Make them pay attention to you.
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean.
Yeah.
We just had a show like that right when we got back in town. So we were doing sold-out shows in Phoenix, and which is awesome because that's where you make your money, is on the road with comedy. Unless you're fucking Joe Rogan or the dudes that are regularly doing the store every night.
Yeah.
You're not making shit here. The stuff that you're getting booked on, you're like maybe gas money.
Yeah.
Or maybe a drink ticket that night.
Yeah.
Which is completely useless to dudes like you and me.
Yeah,
you know what
it's
I
like
mean?
In Sleepwalk With Me, with the Birbiglia's like first movie, like where he's like driving that shit ass Volvo to get gas money, it just enough to get there and back.
Yeah, so that's what we're doing it for here around LA. Nobody's paying shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
You might get lucky and get like we just got a recovery center that reached out for us to do some stuff, and they're gonna pay us like way more than we would get.
That's
really
awesome.
Anywhere.
But that's like an off the beaten
path. But that's
path,
like doesn't
sort of,
happen
yeah.
often.
Right.
And but yeah, so you're doing that. So when you're, so we show up to this bar show, so sold out shows in Phoenix. Awesome. Badass, big rooms, really cool. You know, we get home and we're like back on the grind. Okay, we've got these shows that are friends that pitch
back
us shows.
Back to no one caring.
Back to, we're at this bar, dude, this tiki bar. There's maybe six people there. Nobody's paying attention. The two comics before us bombed so fucking hard. Kind of like what you experienced the first night that you went up, where the guy just sucked the life out of the room.
Yeah.
The material they were saying was just so cringy, and you're like, why are you talking about that? Like, nobody can relate.
Okay, make it funny.
Yeah, nobody can relate to that because it's just gross, or it's just,
or it's dark and sad.
Dark or sad or whatever, which
like,
you can make funny, but if you're not funny,
like
you're not going to do it right.
That one guy, I felt like that. Like, you're just like, oh, man, sorry, man.
Like, start to feel bad for him when you're supposed to laugh with him.
Yeah.
So it was a similar situation like that. And thank God Danielle goes up before me. She's a vet, dude. She's been doing it for like 7-8 years now.
So
she knows.
You're riding those coattails.
Man. I'm just an open micer looking for a way to the top, brother. Yeah. I'm cheat coding my way out.
You got to.
And thank God for her, dude, because she's a vet. She knows how to read a room. She goes up and she just starts fucking digging into everybody. And then all of a sudden the room's shutting up. They're listening. They're ready for comedy. She gets into her material.
That's awesome.
Sets it up. She talks about me. Sets me up perfect. I get to go up there and be like, I can't believe you said that about me.
No, not me.
Then they're like, oh my God, did this just happen right now? He really didn't know? You know?
Yeah.
Like, no, this is material we've been plugging for six
We're
months
that
now.
Good.
It's on the fly. But it was awesome, dude, and it saved the show.
Yeah.
And it was just, but those are the nights where you're like, fuck, man. And I turned to her too, right before she was about to go up. I was like, I don't want to go up. Like, I was like, I don't want to do it. They don't care. They're not paying attention. I still get in my head a lot
before
I go on stage.
I mean, it seems like, you know, you're a year in, so, like, it's like, that's got to, you got to be learning so much. And I was thinking about, like, how much, like, right there, like, dude, like, how much the lineup has to do with a lot of things, too. I mean, like, what I, like, okay, let me understand it better, but what I've gathered from time of seeing a bunch of shows is, like, all right, if you're a band and you're going to see Guns N' Roses, like, there's a band before a band and then Guns N' Roses.
Yes.
Like, whereas with comedy, like, you don't want to be the dude at the end. Like, you want to be right
you
in the middle,
you want to be the dude
right
in the middle in the sweet spot where they're, like, they're not burnt out. You know what I mean? From, like, laughing at fucking homeboy who's got, like, 19 Netflix specials already, and that's who they were there to see.
Yeah. And then
you go
and
up and you
got to
keep that going.
Yeah.
Like, that is the hardest thing ever. And you don't want to be the guy that opens the show while people are still kind of sitting in, still settling in, still checking their phones, still, like, getting their drink orders. You don't want to be that guy either. You want to be, like, third or fourth.
Okay.
Right in the sweet spot.
So Josh set me up pretty well that night.
Dude, he gave you the prime. You got a spot that we fucking work years to get, dude.
That's why I feel terrible about that.
No, don't feel terrible. Yeah. You fucking earned it.
You could tell, though, there was a couple people.
By shitting on TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
There you go.
Okay,
you
fair enough.
Earned your stripes. There's no cheat code.
Yeah.
You made us all laugh before we even thought to go try to make people laugh on stage.
Okay.
So don't worry about it.
But there were a couple that were like, you could feel like they're like, nah, good job.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, I thought you did good. Like, and I said nice things to you, and then you just kind of were a hater. All right.
They sucked. Half that lineup that night. Oh, fuck. I don't want to say that. But, like, there were a couple people on that lineup that night.
No, I mean, they might have just had off nights, you know, like, because it felt
it
like that a little bit too with the one guy, because I think the other, that guy has been pretty funny in other things. And I think he just had an off night, and it was like, it got a little sad.
Well, that,
like,
particular guy, no, that guy has those nights regularly. Just
I was
nobody knows who he is.
I was saving that.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Well, I'm an alcoholic.
I gotta live my truth, man.
Assholes Anonymous.
Yeah.
But no, man. And I still get intimidated. You know what I mean? Like, when we do get pitched, like, shows at comedy clubs that are, like, big comedy clubs, sometimes I'll get in my head, and sometimes I won't do as well as, like, I wanted to. And the funny thing is that when you're up there and you're firing on all cylinders, and then you have a night where you're, like, one cylinder is just kind of, like, not quite there.
Yeah.
You think the whole set sucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you get in your head and you get depressed.
But you
kind of,
what's nice for you is you have your partner that, like, can kind of help you.
Oh, yeah. She's,
like, if you're feeling like, man, that one sucks, she's like, yeah, it was three quarters of the way good. Then, that, like, that helps, because, like, I feel like if you're just in your head thinking it sucks entirely, you forego all the rest of that, and you forego what your timing was on certain jokes, and you don't even think about those things. And then she can kind of help you get out of that and go, you know what, you're right. 20, maybe
said it different this
5
way.
Minutes of it sucked at this part, but the other 15 minutes were good.
She'll be like, and we do that for each other. She'll be like, why'd you say it different this way? Or why did you take so long to get to it this time? And I'll be like, yeah, you're right. Fuck. You know what I mean? And that's the cool part about, like having a partner that's doing the same thing as you.
Yeah.
Is, like, you guys are there to kind of, like, sit back with your notes and be like, oh, you did it that way, and bring it to your attention.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, fuck, yeah, I did, didn't I? Fuck. And then you're quick to correct it. We're, like, quick to sculpt each other into the best performers that we can be for the next show.
Yeah, and that's rad, because I'll be honest, the amount of time that I've spent around comedians, that is not what's happening.
No.
It's more like, fuck that dude. I don't want him to do well. Fuck him. And then it's like, oh, you got the show? Cool, man.
Yeah.
And they're, like, hating on you hard. Like, there's a lot of that in that community that
I haven't
noticed
fucking
quickly.
Got any of that my way too much.
But I noticed,
because I am a personable guy, comedians. I talk to a lot of people. Like, I try to stay positive, and, like, I've spread a lot of, like, good energy. Like, that's my main thing. But I like also book shows out here, so I hook people up. So yeah, a lot of people aren't.
Yeah, you got the good way. Yeah.
So a lot of people aren't as shitty towards me.
In front of your face.
in front of my face, only a year in and already being where I'm at. Like, I'm getting opportunities that I shouldn't be getting.
Well, you're hustling at it, dude, and that's it, you know?
Danielle will tell you, she's like, I wouldn't be on tour with you if I didn't think you deserved it. If I didn't,
yeah.
she'll say it. She'll be the first one to tell people, and it's not just because I'm giving her that sweet dick, you know.
Yeah, it's not.
She's openly said it on podcasts and shit too, like other interviews. Like, if he wasn't funny, I wouldn't fuck with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
well, and the thing is too, I was gonna say that there's a big difference between being a year in and going up as much as you do, and working on it as much as you do, and being a year in and going, oh, once on a weekend or once every other week, I might, you know, or once a month I'll go up. Because time, it's like, you've spent that year, but like, how many hours have you actually put into
exactly. It's like, okay, there's 365 days in a year. If you're doing four or five mics a night consistently, 365 days a year, you've gone up. A couple thousand times in that year.
Dude,
you're fine. You're good to go.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're not like ready.
You're not like golden or anything. Nobody's ever golden. There's never like a, all right.
No, but you're learning a ton throughout
that. You're definitely more experienced than the guy that's two, 3 years in, but he only goes up two nights a week and only goes to one mic.
Yeah.
Twice.
And that's what I have to imagine. Having tried one time, it was awesome. I could feel why you would get addicted.
You gotta eat shit once before you really can fucking appreciate it.
Right. And that's what I was saying, if you continue with it,
you will. You'll hit those blocks where you'll be like, oh fuck, I don't wanna do it again. You know what I mean?
Right. And that's what I was gonna say is like I had fun with that, and I could see how you would get addicted to it, but I also can appreciate how much you have to work at it, and how much you would learn over the process of it, and that no one's just instantly good at it. And it doesn't matter if you were like the dude
in high school that made everybody laugh. I've had some
friends.
That
guy's annoying as shit anyway.
Right?
We were talking about, we don't have to name names, but we were talking about comedians earlier that you didn't say anything poorly. I did because I don't, I feel a specific way about a couple of them. And that's what they remind me of is like, I'm funny in a locker room and I'm funny in front of the cute girls because they think I'm cute. Well, yeah, but you're not funny, but like, you think that you are because the cute girl thought that you were funny.
So you have the confidence.
So then you're funny, but you're not really funny. And that's the hater in me, I guess, because it's like, well, technically they're funny because they're selling shows
they're
and they're
doing
this and that. And I get it. But to me, I struggle with that a little bit because
I don't think they're funny either.
Because it's just like, oh, yeah, I know you're cute and everything worked out for you in life. We get that, but that doesn't mean that you're funny.
Yeah.
I've always found, and this may not be universally true, there are somewhat attractive comedians, but what I have found is that the fat guy who's balding and has funny ears is usually way funnier than the hot looking girl or guy.
And people are more willing to like laugh with you if you do look like that than if you're like a hot dude.
Like, if you see this hot girl walk up on stage, and even if she's funny,
the first thing you're thinking is like,
oh, hot girl. Then you see this overweight girl who's goofy looking, but she just walks up and is fucking hilarious. I don't know, immediately I'm like, yeah, I'm right with this person and it's funny and I'm not distracted.
You're not thinking
by
about
else.
Like, oh, what's her.
But if you look at the
wonder what her butt looks like.
Yeah, you know exactly. I mean? And then if you look at a good looking dude who goes up on stage and he's like, part of my funny is like I show my six pack, and you're like, oh fuck. You know, like you, dude. Yeah, and it's like, but then you see some goofy looking guy who you know was staying home by himself on prom night.
Yeah.
And that guy's fucking funny
because that guy's got fucking stories that people
can relate to.
He's
laughing the tears away, dude. And
there's a very small percentage of people that can relate to everything going good for them in life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when you're going up there and you're talking about all these things that like aren't struggle, and relating it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like,
all
right.
So, like, you remember, like, when, like, all these hot girls wanted my number and stuff, and then, like, you know, work just gave me a bonus, and then I got a brand new car, and I drove it home to my big house.
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah? I don't relate to that at all.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's all relatable, and then a lot of times you get those people that go up, the hot people or whatever.
Yeah.
The only stuff that they can do is observational shit, like shit that they see, and they don't relate it to themselves, because the last thing they want to do, because they've been built up their whole lives and everything's perfect and they think they're awesome and they're great, the last thing they want to do is like talk about the things that they're insecure about.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're secretly the most insecure people of them all.
Oh, for sure.
Because if they get one comment that isn't, oh my God, you're amazingly hot, it ruins their lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So that's the material that they steer clear from. But the most successful comedians, if you take notice, they're talking about it. They do still do the observational humor, but they tie themselves into it,
right,
and their personal experience with it.
Exactly, dude. I feel like that's the thing, because then you can connect with them, and that's what you want. You want
that's
that vulnerability of being able to connect with somebody about what's funny, because that's what ends up being the funniest to me, at least, is the stuff I'm vulnerable about, or the stuff that I don't feel confident about, or the things that I fucked up in life. Like, when someone can turn that and make it funny, or like sad stuff, make it funny, because like that's because
my favorite.
They're vulnerable.
That's all I know how to do is to turn my sad shit into something funny. You know what I mean? Like, that's my whole shtick.
Exactly.
That's everything that I'm doing, is I'm telling you like some fucked up shit, but I'm making you laugh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's cool to laugh with me.
Yeah, and it's awesome that you can just like find your way like that. Like, you know what works for you. And I feel like going up and doing that so often throughout this year is what helps you find your voice.
Dude, it's cathartic. And it's like, if you're not talking about the best part about it too, if you're not, I mean, in my opinion, if you're not talking about yourself and your personal experiences, why the fuck are you even up there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And second, like, it makes it so much easier so that your material doesn't get stolen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You know it's you.
Yeah.
And it's your personal experience. Like, granted, somebody may have something similar to it, but it's not going to be exact.
Right.
Somebody goes up and does your shtick bit for bit, you're like, dude.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's going to know right away.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you can
exactly.
tell. Like, this guy didn't do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you know what I was thinking, too, a little bit about, like, being that you know, we're in recovery and addict type people, it's kind of a great thing because like you were saying, like, you love talking about comedy and you love thinking about comedy and you're going up all the time and you've been doing that for a year, like, obsessively. It's kind of great that we are the obsessive type, because then you just get obsessive about what you're doing,
what you're into.
And you're like doing it, and like, and that's how you get good at it.
That's the thing, dude. It's constant repetition. And when you're, did you go to a recovery center? Like, were you in rehab?
No, I actually.
Oh, you did it.
Yeah, so what happened with me is, like, I sort of tell this part of it for me, but I had fucked up my finances. I lost my house, and then I had to move in with my mom, and I didn't have insurance, and like creditors were coming after me, and it was like this big problem, because what happened, I was drinking, getting paid a lot of money to drink in bars and do these things, and like, so I would be able to get chunks of money, and then I would waste it frivolously on vacations and things, and I'd get chunks of money, and I just never thought, oh, it's not gonna end, like, I'll just always be able to go get 10-20 grand real quick, and then I can sort this out.
Right.
And that kind of dried up and changed. And so what happened was that finances got bad and things got bad, and I didn't have insurance. So I was so afraid to go into a rehab because I felt that would bankrupt me, you know, entirely.
Completely,
and then I'd be fucked. So what I did, and I call it this, the poor man's rehab, and I do not recommend it, because I had I went through DTs and I had a seizure, and then I ended up having to get like go to the hospital anyway and have to pay for that and have to get like
the drip or what?
Yeah, I just had to get like rehydrated by putting
the syringe in the arm.
But so they're just kind of getting fluids back into me and doing that, but But it was it was not a good experience. But what I did do then is I did 5 meetings a day, and I just didn't leave the clubhouse, and I just
hung out,
stayed there, and did that. And I smoked cigarettes in between, and then I went to a meeting, and then I smoked the cigarettes in between, and talked to anybody that was around, and then I sat there with myself, and I would write down stuff, and then I'd go to the meetings, and I did that for like 3 months. And fortunately, because I didn't have a job at the time, and I was able to just kind of focus on that stuff, and I had a partner that was basically financially supporting me at that point, and she was just helping me kind of get my life back together, and you know, and I'm always grateful for that, and so that's what I did. But I did a makeshift rehab because I did need actual medical help that I ended up having to get. And then I went to meetings all throughout the entire day, and I just stayed there. So it was like, I would have done rehab probably if I could have afforded it, or if I had insurance or something that would do it. But
insurance helped a lot.
Yeah. So,
and like a lot of general relief, like Obamacare at the time helped a lot.
Yeah. Well, but the thing is that I can say honestly about myself, and I don't talk too deeply about it, you know, in public forum, but I have been lately. But what I'll say is that I'm happy with the way that mine went. And I think everybody has their own journey into getting clean and sober and doing what they have to do. And I'm happy that mine went the way it did, because sometimes I do think that if I had the money, or if I had the insurance, or if I had that and I went to a rehab and they just like weaned me off of things and it was comfortable for me, and like I got to that place, I think I might exhaust that option as many times as I could. If I could have manipulated situations and I could have done things and it wasn't that uncomfortable for me and this and that, I would have. But because getting sober was so fucking awful for me, I don't ever want to do it again. And that's how it is in my head. So I'm like, I don't know what it's like to go to a rehab and do that stuff, but I know how awful it fucking was to not.
Right.
And I don't want to do that again. So
did you ever have to go to jail or anything like that?
I mean, just little like nightly stays and stuff like that. You know, like you get locked up and then you get out in the morning or whatever.
But you never actually had to go to like county and
I never had to go to county.
That was what got me. Yeah. I was like terrified. I was like, holy shit. Like all the stuff that you see on TV and stuff, which isn't how it is at all. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's so over dramatized and stuff, but like I didn't know what to expect. So the scare of like, oh man, you're gonna get butt fucked. Somebody's gonna stab you.
Oh man, you're gonna get butt fucked.
Yeah, like that was scary enough.
You like you bring your own Vaseline just in case.
Yeah, man, and like I got a little butt. Yeah. I wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not the
case
at all.
You're fingering your own butt before you go in the night before.
I had no idea what to expect.
Gotta get ready.
So that was scary, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like, but then like the whole like going into rehab and like they get you into repetition and like it's basically like boot camp, dude. You're up at fucking 6 a.m. You got to make your bed. You eat breakfast. You're in a meeting. You go, you smoke your 10-minute cigarette. Then you're back in another meeting. Like that repetition of just like drilling it. I needed that. It like drill sergeanted me. You know what I mean? I got home. Got my life back together where I'm like, okay, cool. Like anytime my room even gets slightly messy or something I'm on it.
Yeah.
Super cleanly now. You know what I mean? Like it was like going into the military, but like not.
Yeah. you know?
And that like prepped me, and it did the same thing for like comedy. It was like, okay, I like doing this, so I want to do it all the time. And I have no reason not to, because I can't go and like just chill and hang out at a bar. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Because I'll be like, ooh, all right, what's next?
Use that time wisely.
Stay on the move. So it's just boom, boom, boom. It's grinding. It becomes easy. You know what I mean?
It
becomes repetitious. You do what you want to do when you do it. You go to work, you come home, hit a mic, hit another mic, hit another mic, go to sleep. You know, eat,
yeah,
go
that's
to sleep.
Rad.
So it's just that cycle, and it keeps you in check, and it gives you. Like, I feel like I read this book while I was in jail. It was called The Purpose-Driven Life. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
It was written by Rick Warren, and it's basically like a guide to like find what it is you love and just pour all your energy into it. So pages from that just keep resonating in my mind. And a lot of it, like, brings you closer to God or whatever, you know, taboo subject for some people, not for me. I don't care.
Right.
Whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I had to
just butt fucked God last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah.
We all had to figure it out, you know what I mean? In our own
jail,
way.
Amazingly enough. Yeah.
Whatever, you know what I mean? But like, yeah, a lot of it was like tying it in, not forgetting like, oh, like, you know, you're given these opportunities, make the best of it and just find what you love. And like Bukowski said it, right? Like, find what you love and let it fucking kill you.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing, dude.
Yeah.
I'm basically treating this as an addiction until it's not fucking working anymore.
Right, and it's a positive and healthy addiction, you know, and that's what's rad.
You see progress, you see feedback for it. When you drink, you don't, you might get laid, you know what I mean? But that, like, that, where does it go from there?
Yeah.
You might get a TV show on MTV, you know, but.
yeah, and then it might fucking ruin all your friendships and all of your, and your health and your everything. Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it. I was thinking, dude, it's been so rad sitting down and having like a long chat with you. We you know, we had met each other at the club, then we talked a little bit about your shit story, but it's good to sit and talk more and more about it. I was wondering, like, what shows you have coming up? Because, like, I think we started it with talking about couples therapy, which is your show with your girlfriend, and she goes up first. What's Danielle's last name?
Danielle Arce. Danielle, and you can find her on Instagram at Danielle Arce Comedy. You can find me at Nick Romero Comedy. You can find our company Stray Life Entertainment on there as well at straylife.ent. And like, you can find out what shows we got going on, all of that. We're doing a lot of more local based stuff this month. And then next month, she's my booker. She's the one that keeps track of everything. She's the one that submits all my shit, gets us all our shows that aren't stuff that we independently produce.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. Like, I'm the head of Stray Life Entertainment. I'm the one that books all the stuff here.
Yeah.
That's like in this particular town in South Bay. Like, if you see Stray Life Entertainment Presents, that was me. I put that shit together.
Yeah, that's
right. And she's the one that books our stuff everywhere. I do all the flyers, all the promotions and stuff.
Nice.
Like, I'm the one.
So you guys are your own personal street team.
We're our own fucking street team, dude.
Dude, that's rad. But, and it sounds like just an awesome, you know.
It's a cool dynamic that we got going on, but we're also still, we're comics. We're still fresh into a relationship.
Yeah.
So we're still figuring that shit out. Everything's not fucking roses all the time.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
We have the same relationship problems as everybody else. Honeymoon phase is starting to wear off. Sometimes her fucking face annoys the shit out of me. Sometimes my face annoys the shit out of hers. Same shit. We're going through the same shit.
Well, that's what's awesome. And we've been saying the word relatable. I just saw the Ellen special that she had, relatable, and that was pretty awesome. But just the relatable thing is that, you know, couples therapy, it's like everybody needs it. Everybody that's in a relationship
needs it.
If you want a real one,
you know what I mean?
You're
so
all
we go up there and we
stuff.
Air our dirty laundry, man. And if you think, if you can get a kick out of that, being like, oh, all these things that I think about my girlfriend, they go up and they fucking say it.
Yeah,
like, where you say it, you know what I mean? We throw each other under the bus and it's fun.
Yeah, that
you know
is
what I mean?
Fun. Yeah.
It's fun, and then we don't have to fight about it at home doing it.
Yeah, yeah,
we get
yeah.
to do it on stage.
Yeah,
you know
that's,
what I mean?
That's
it's
rad.
Fun.
So cool. So check out again your website.
Yeah, check out Nick Romero Comedy on Instagram, Danielle Arce Comedy on Instagram, and fucking follow this man's podcast if you're not already.
Oh
clearly,
yeah,
this dude is killing the game right
Bathroom
now.
Bathroom Break Podcast on Instagram.
Hell yeah.
And Rab _ himself, and then we have Rab himself videos. We'll throw this up on the YouTube page.
Hell
there.
Oh yeah, dude.
So
this
sweet.
Was fun, man. It's
dude,
like,
hell yeah.
The first time we met, we just got into a conversation and just kind of fucking connected, and it was cool that we had a lot of shit in common. And I'm glad that we got to sit down and finally fucking hash this shit out, man.
Hell yeah. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on, brother.
Thanks, brother.
All right.